Same goes for the next area we will look at, neurodegenerative diseases, especially Alzheimer's and other dementias. Chapter 10. FMD and Nutrition in the Prevention and Treatment of Alzheimer's and Other Neurodegenerative Diseases. For their review of this chapter, I thank neurologist Marcus Bach, a specialist in the application of the ketogenic diet and fasting-mimicking diet at the Experimental and Clinical Research Center, Charité University Medicine Berlin, and Patrizio Odetti, Chief of Geriatrics at the University of Geneva San Martino Hospital. Brain function and damage has long been a scholarly focus and passion of mine. As with aging, it represents a daunting scientific challenge. The brain is commonly afflicted by diseases including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's that are devastating to sufferers and those around them. Yet I know and have spent time with many very elderly people who remain sharp and witty into their 90s and hundreds. My goal is to help as many people as possible live to a very old age with normal mental faculties. This chapter focuses mostly on Alzheimer's disease and other dementias, specifically how nutrition and an FMD may affect their incidence and progression. Although Parkinson's disease is also one of my research group's areas of interest, we have not yet completed studies related to it. We have high hopes that the longevity diet and FMD will have beneficial effects on Parkinson's, but it would be premature to speculate on possible outcomes before performing basic and clinical research on this disease. Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease, AD, accounts for 60-80% of all dementias. It is characterized by a loss of memory that interferes with normal daily tasks. In the early stages of the disease, patients have difficulty remembering newly acquired information. Later, they become disoriented, show changes in mood and behavior, and often grow suspicious of family members or caregivers whom they fail to recognize and remember. As the memory loss becomes severe, patients may have difficulty speaking, walking, and even swallowing. When I first started working on AD in the laboratory of USC neurobiologist Caleb Finch in 1997, the great promise in combating the disease was a vaccine against a protein called beta-amyloid, which accumulates in the brains of AD patients and which scientists generally agree is somehow involved in the disease, since it is linked to both the hereditary and non-hereditary forms. 20 years later, this strategy has yet to produce any effective treatment, and hundreds of laboratories are still searching for a cure. It is also no longer clear that beta-amyloid accumulation has a primary causal role in the disease. While we continue to search for a cure, though, even a 5-year delay in the average age of Alzheimer's disease diagnosis would cut the number of patients by nearly half, since onset occurs at such an advanced age that many patients would die of another cause before developing the disease. Thus, AD is an excellent candidate for the use of dietary interventions, such as the FMD, with wide effects on the aging process, which could delay AD onset or progression. Prevention of Alzheimer's disease in mice. Not surprisingly, the major risk factor for AD is aging. Incidence of the disease increases by more than 100-fold from age 60 to age 95. Mouse studies have provided a platform for understanding Alzheimer's disease, since the human genes known to cause AD can be introduced into the mouse genome, promoting some of the memory loss and learning deficits observed in Alzheimer's patients. Again, it is sad that we must sacrifice mice to identify interventions for Alzheimer's. But before we can begin human testing, we have no choice but to do preliminary tests in mice. It's worth noting that the mice used in our AD studies do not appear to suffer. The cognitive decline caused by the mutations we introduce is similar to what occurs in humans with AD who reach very old age. Thanks to these studies in mice, my group is now ready to start a clinical trial on the use of FMD in the prevention and treatment of AD together with a group of clinical geriatricians and neurologists at the University of Geneva. We have already performed preliminary studies on the effects of the FMD on cognitive performance in normal participants and obtained positive and very promising results, which serve as a strong foundation for the Alzheimer's studies. The point of this section is not to review all mouse studies related to diet and Alzheimer's. Rather, the goal is to lay the foundation for specific diets in the prevention and treatment of neurodegenerative diseases. Our first study attempted to delay the onset of Alzheimer's disease by regulating the genes that accelerate aging. We used triple transgenic mice, which have three of the mutated human genes associated with Alzheimer's disease, APP, PS1, and Tau. Because AD in the great majority of cases occurs after age 70, we opted against using a chronic low-calorie diet, since even if it proved effective, it could not be safely adopted by elderly people. We decided to regulate the activity of the two major sets of genes accelerating aging by tricking the cells, giving the mice a normal diet that lacked the 9 essential amino acids, those the body cannot generate. Isoleucine, leucine, lysine, methionine, phenylalanine, threonine, tryptophan, valine, and arginine. We also gave the mice excess quantities of the non-essential amino acids, which the human body can make and therefore does not need to obtain from the diet. In other words, the test diet was identical to the normal diet, but contained fewer essential amino acids and more non-essential amino acids. Starting at young to middle age, the mice received this diet every other week, alternating with a normal diet. The potent effect of this minimal change is obvious from the 75% reduction we detected in the levels of the pro-aging and cancer growth factor IGF-1 in the mice while on the diet. Notably, the effect of this dietary intervention on IGF-1 levels continued even after the mice returned to their normal diet. Months later, the mice placed on the protein-restricted diet every other week had better performance in several different cognitive tests, indicating that they were protected from Alzheimer's disease symptoms. These results are evidence of the potential of nootrotechnology, that is, understanding the effect of food composition on specific genes and pathways in the quest for therapeutic diets that are minimally disruptive, yet have effects comparable or superior to drug therapy. This is different from the concept of nutraceuticals, which in most cases are foods engineered for concentrated levels of particular molecules that have specific biological or medical functions. For example, concentrated vitamin C obtained from acerola can be considered a nutraceutical. In a study I have already mentioned, mice received a reduced-calorie FMD for 4-day cycles twice a month, 8 days a month total, starting in middle age. In old age, these mice learned and remembered much better than mice in the control group. See figure 10.1. We observed performance improvements in all tests, including motor coordination on a rotating wheel, and both long-term and short-term memory. The FMD cycles had profound effects on genes that play key roles in the aging process, including aging of the brain. Researchers at the U.S. National Institute on Aging have performed many studies in this area, focusing on alternate day fasting. Receiving no food one day and a normal diet the next day, these mice consistently showed improvements in learning and memory function. The benefits applied to both normal mice and mice with Alzheimer's disease. We are now ready to begin clinical trials to test the effect of similar but less calorie-restricted diets in humans. Dietary prevention of Alzheimer's disease in humans. The periodic FMD, because it promotes a longer and generally healthier lifespan, is recommended for most people. But because it provides a very low level of calories, it is not recommended for people over the age of 70. What would be the point of adopting a diet that prevents Alzheimer's disease if the same diet promoted a deficiency in the immune system or made the patient frail? Thus, before a dietary intervention can be recommended, it is imperative that its potential to prevent or treat a disease or condition outweighs its potential to cause adverse side effects. Thus, the minimal risks of using an FMD in a 65-year-old would be justified if this person was at high risk for developing Alzheimer's. This should be considered only until age 70 or possibly older, depending on the availability to maintain a normal weight and muscle mass, and based on the individual's overall health status and the opinion of a neurologist. Notably, several studies indicate that a calorie-restricted diet improves and prevents loss of muscle mass in older animals, and therefore further studies are needed to determine whether periodic FMDs would have positive or negative effects on muscle mass and strength in the elderly. With the availability of inexpensive and highly specific DNA testing, we can now also consider diets tailored for the prevention of a specific disease in individuals. For example, the APOE protein, responsible for carrying cholesterol and cholesterol-like molecules, comes in three forms: APOE2, APOE3, and APOE4. For people, particularly women, who have two copies of the APOE4 gene, the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease is 15 times higher than average. In the general population, the chance of having AD after age 85 is more than 40%. For someone with two copies, alleles, of the APOE4 gene, the risk shoots up to 91%, with half of them developing the disease by age 68. I encourage anyone whose parents or grandparents had Alzheimer's disease to pursue genetic testing to determine if they have risk factors for the disease. If the tests come back positive, they may want to talk to their doctor about adopting the dietary recommendations that follow. The longevity diet plus excess olive oil and nuts. The periodic FMD may be effective in cognitive disease prevention in mice and possibly humans, but everyday diet also plays a central role in cognitive health. Although we are still conducting our studies into the positive effects of the longevity diet on neurodegenerative diseases, an everyday diet that has been shown to be protective against cognitive decline is the Mediterranean diet, in combination with high levels of olive oil. A 6-year study in Barcelona, Spain, originally designed as a cardiovascular study and mentioned in the last chapter, monitored 447 volunteers with a mean age of 67 years who were at high cardiovascular risk but cognitively healthy. Participants were randomly assigned to a Mediterranean diet supplemented with either extra virgin olive oil or 30 grams of nuts per day, or a control diet in which they were advised to reduce dietary fat. Participants on the Mediterranean diet plus olive oil or nuts performed better in cognitive testing than those on the low-fat control diet. In people over age 60, and likely also in younger people, a Mediterranean diet supplemented with either olive oil or nuts is associated with improved cognitive function. However, an analysis of many studies on the Mediterranean diet and neurodegenerative diseases concluded that adherence to the Mediterranean diet only decreases the risk of neurodegenerative diseases by 13%. Thus, in order to optimize brain health and delay or prevent Alzheimer's onset, I recommend the longevity diet plus additional nutrients, including olive oil and nuts, as described below. Though the efficacy of this diet in the prevention of dementia has not been demonstrated yet, it has a higher potential for significant impact since it represents a stricter version of the Mediterranean diet and includes many additional nutrients of reported benefit. Coffee and coconut oil. The role of coffee in health and longevity has been controversial. Although earlier studies included coffee as a risk factor for a variety of age-related diseases, including cancer and heart disease, later, more careful studies indicate that moderate coffee consumption may in fact protect against diseases, including Parkinson's, type 2 diabetes, and liver disease. A few studies suggest that coffee may also protect against Alzheimer's. Researchers at the University of South Carolina reviewed studies published between 1966 and 2014 assessing the relationship between coffee consumption and dementias. They examined 11 studies of a total of 29,000 participants. Overall, Coffee drinkers and non-coffee drinkers showed no difference in their risk of developing dementia. However, the group with the highest coffee consumption had an approximately 30% reduction in the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. It is possible that drinking 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day may protect against Alzheimer's, as it was shown to protect against Parkinson's. This may be caused in part by coffee's high polyphenol content. However, this type of coffee consumption could cause side effects, and its use should be considered only if you are at high risk for AD and then under medical supervision. Coconut oil contains high levels of saturated fat, but unlike other dietary saturated fats, which are composed mainly of long-chain fatty acids, fats with 13 to 21 carbons in the chain, coconut oil contains a high level of medium-chain fatty acids, MCFA, or fats with 6 to 12 carbons in the chain. MCFA are easily converted into ketone bodies, the same molecules produced at high levels during fasting. The brain begins to utilize ketones as a major source of energy during prolonged fasting periods and when glucose is scarce. In a study of patients with Alzheimer's disease, consumption of 40 milliliters, 1.5 fluid ounces, per day of extra virgin coconut oil resulted in an improvement in cognitive status. This finding is consistent with other studies suggesting medium-chain fatty acids protect against dementia. While coconut oil's protective role must be confirmed in large clinical studies, the published data indicates it may improve cognition in Alzheimer's disease patients. Notably, the American Heart Association includes coconut oil among the potentially harmful foods containing saturated fats. Whether this concern is appropriate is hotly debated, but the possibility that regular use of coconut oil could increase cardiovascular disease should be considered when using it to prevent or treat dementias. Bad fats and Alzheimer's disease. While the medium-length fats in coconut oil and the monounsaturated fats in olive oil may protect against Alzheimer's disease, the opposite is true of saturated and other fats, the bad fats, which may increase the risk of developing dementia in addition to cardiovascular disease. Several studies indicate that consuming high levels of saturated or trans fatty acids increases the risk of dementia. In studies conducted at the Chicago Health and Aging Project, consumption of saturated and trans fatty acids was associated with an increased risk of AD. These findings support adoption of the longevity diet, which is nearly free of the saturated fats and trans fats found in high quantities in animal-derived foods, especially red meat, butter, cheese, whole milk, pork, and candy. Sufficient nourishment. Certain vitamins and other nutrients have been proposed to be neuroprotective, that is, capable of protecting neurons against damage. This view is probably simplistic, but some studies have implicated deficiencies in omega-3 fatty acids, B vitamins, and vitamins C, D, and E in brain aging and dementias. To date, most have failed to show a clear association between high-dose supplementation of these vitamins and nutrients and protection against dementias. That said, every diet should contain a sufficient level of foods rich in all these nutrients. See Appendix B for foods containing the highest levels of these nutrients. In fact, a review of studies indicates that AD patients have lower levels of folate and vitamins A, B12, C, and E. It would not be surprising if, in the future, certain deficiencies were found to contribute to AD. So, while supplementing with high levels of vitamins or fatty acids may not be proven as protective, it avoids the risk of developing a deficiency which could accelerate brain degeneration and dementias. Foods rich in vitamins may reduce the risk of AD, but, for example, B vitamin supplementation was found to be largely ineffective, except in countries where food is not fortified with the folate vitamin. Age-appropriate weight and abdominal circumference. The association between body mass index, which takes into account a person's weight relative to height, and cognition, is complex and varies according to age. In younger and middle-aged adults, a high BMI is associated with reduced cognition or a higher risk of dementia once these adults reach old age. However, a slightly higher BMI in older adults is associated with improved cognition and lower mortality. Thus, it is important to maintain a healthy weight and ideal abdominal circumference up to age 65. Beyond that point, the goal should be to reach the upper limit of the healthy BMI and abdominal circumference ranges. For men, a BMI in the 22 to 23 range may be ideal up to age 65 to 75, but beyond that age, a BMI in the 23 to 25 range may be preferable in order to avoid loss of muscle mass and other detrimental deficiencies. This goal could be achieved by adding small amounts of foods not permitted or very restricted under the longevity diet, such as eggs, goat's or sheep's cheese, and yogurt, dark chocolate, fruit, and higher levels of fish and seafood. These foods should be consumed only in moderation even at older ages. Adding them to the longevity diet may help prevent weight loss and muscle loss, especially when protein consumption, 0.4 grams of protein per pound of body weight, is combined with muscle training and exercise. See Chapter 5. Dietary treatment of Alzheimer's disease. Dietary interventions to prevent dementias, including coconut oil, olive oil, and the longevity diet, may also help patients with Alzheimer's disease or a condition called mild cognitive impairment, which often precedes dementia. Unlike their role in treating cancer, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, however, the role of dietary interventions in the treatment of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias is little understood and still speculative. Because AD is devastating to patients and their families, and because most AD patients cannot afford to wait for future studies, I will describe the mouse studies we have completed and the studies we are about to perform in AD patients, which I believe have potential. Again, the purpose of these interventions isn't necessarily to cure AD, but to try to delay its onset by 5 or 10 years or more. Only a neurologist specialized in AD can determine whether any individual patient should try the diet. It must be understood that this is an unproven and risky strategy, which needs clinical testing in large trials before its safety and efficacy can be established. It would be best to try the following recommendations as part of an approved clinical trial. As I mentioned, we had positive results in a mouse study alternating week-long cycles of a protein-free diet supplemented with non-essential amino acids and week-long cycles of a normal high-protein diet. With the input of an experienced neurologist, AD patients could try weekly cycles of a low-protein diet, 0.1 to 0.15 grams of protein per pound of body weight, alternating with a relatively high-protein diet, 0.45 grams of protein per pound of body weight. The patient would eat a diet based on carbohydrates and good fats, no meat, fish, eggs, milk, or cheese, and low levels of legumes, for 1 week, followed by a normal and high-nourishment longevity diet the next week. The diet should include daily supplements of coconut oil, 40 milliliters. During the nourishment week, salmon and other fish high in omega-3 oils, see Appendix B, should be eaten at least 3 times a week, with care taken to avoid high-mercury fish. Continue these week-on-week-off cycles of very low protein and normal protein for at least 6 months to see if, 1, cognitive performance improves, and, 2, the patient maintains normal weight and muscle mass and does not develop other symptoms. If the patient loses more than 5% of body weight or muscle mass, further cycles of the diet should be delayed until the patient returns to a healthy weight. Another admittedly risky option is to use the monthly FMD, which we have tested in people ages 20 to 70, but not in older subjects or in AD patients. See Chapter 6. In a small and preliminary study, we observed improvements in cognitive performance in subjects who received 3 cycles of the monthly FMD. This is consistent with the strong effects of the twice-a-month FMD started in middle age on neural regeneration and the improved cognitive performance in mice once they reach old age. Note that FMD is potentially very risky in elderly subjects, especially those who are frail, are low weight, or have lost weight during the progression of the disease. In the periods between FMD cycles, patients should follow a high-nourishment plant and fish-based diet that's relatively high in protein, 0.45 grams of protein per pound of body weight. I emphasize once more that these interventions should be considered only in the absence of other viable options and based on the recommendation of a specialized neurologist with the precautions and warnings listed above and preferably as part of a clinical trial. Exercise both body and mind. Remaining both physically and mentally active has been shown to protect against age-related dementias. A review of all the studies on exercise and dementia, covering 800 patients and 18 randomized clinical trials, concluded that physical activity, particularly aerobic exercise such as running and swimming, improves cognitive function in patients with dementia. See the exercise guidelines in Chapter 5. Exercise is important in both the prevention and treatment of dementias. Naturally, for frail and older patients, a stationary bicycle may be more appropriate than running or swimming. Pedal resistance can be adjusted to achieve the right level of difficulty to challenge but avoid physical harm to the patient. Another way to ward off AD and other dementias is to maintain brain activity. Reading, solving puzzles, and playing computer games have all been shown to improve cognition and help prevent or delay dementias. Summary: Prevention and Treatment of Neurodegenerative Diseases. Prevention. The following are guidelines for people at high risk of developing dementias, given family history or early cognitive decline. 1. Adopt the longevity diet and the periodic FMD. 2. Incorporate plenty of olive oil, 50 milliliters per day, and nuts, 30 grams per day. 3. Drink coffee. For people at relatively low risk of AD, keep it to 1 or 2 cups a day. For people at high risk, drink up to 3 or 4 cups a day. Speak to your doctor if you have problems. 4. Take 40 milliliters of coconut oil per day, but consider potential heart disease risk. People with or at risk for cardiovascular disease should not use coconut oil. 5. Avoid saturated fats and trans fats. 6. Avoid all animal-based products, with the exception of low-mercury fish and cheese or other dairy products from goat's milk. 7. Follow a high-nourishment diet containing omega-3, B vitamins, and vitamins C, D, and E. 8. Take a multivitamin and mineral every day. Treatment. The following are guidelines for people who have already been diagnosed with AD or dementia. This treatment plan must be approved and supervised by a neurologist and should be combined with standard of care. 1. Follow all the dementia prevention dietary recommendations above. 2. Talk to your neurologist about following cycles of a protein and essential amino acid deficient diet, followed by normal calorie intake and/or cycles of the periodic FMD. With AD and other diseases that are later in onset, it's important to remember that calorie and nutrient-restricted diets are potentially dangerous to the elderly. So the neurologist on the case should work with a registered dietitian to optimize the effects on brain function while minimizing risks and side effects. Although our studies into AD are perhaps the most speculative, this is an area I feel especially passionate about. By acting on the aging process using strategies like the longevity diet, it is possible to delay and even prevent diseases and remain as healthy as Emma Morano or Salvatore Caruso, who remembered well not only what they had done an hour earlier, but also remembered many stories and even songs from their youth. This is my ambitious vision, and we're working with labs and researchers around the world to help make it possible. Chapter 11. FMD and Nutrition in the Prevention and Treatment of Inflammatory and Autoimmune Diseases. For their review of this chapter, I thank Kurt Hong, MD, PhD, Associate Professor and Director of the USC Center for Clinical Nutrition, Los Angeles, and Andreas Michelson, Head Physician at the Experimental and Clinical Research Center, Charité University, Medicine, Berlin. Aging and the Autoimmune System. As we age, we suffer damage to or malfunction of the cells of our immune system. White blood cells, central to the immune system, including T cells, macrophages, and neutrophils, naturally produce inflammatory factors. These normally play a central role in coordinating many different healthy immune functions, ranging from combating and killing bacteria and viruses to killing and disposing of damaged human cells, including cancer cells. But as we get older, and also in association with disease, production of both immune cells and these inflammatory factors can become dysregulated. When this happens, inflammation can be activated even when it is not needed. This can result in a low-level systemic inflammation involving the entire body. In some cases, this inflammation is followed by the development of a strong immunity against normal cells or molecules within cells, resulting in a self-recognition in which the immune system attacks parts of its own body. This is what occurs in autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis, Crohn's, and type 1 diabetes. One way to determine whether someone has systemic inflammation, considered a risk factor for cancer and cardiovascular diseases, among other conditions, is to measure the level of C-reactive protein in the blood. The liver naturally produces CRP in response to systemic inflammation. Research shows that about a third of U.S. adults have systemic inflammation as measured by CRP, but large portions of European and other populations are also affected, a consequence of normal aging and unhealthy behaviors, such as consumption of Western diets, obesity, and exposure to infection. Because the Mediterranean diet has been associated with a reduced risk of disease, many Europeans believe they are protected by their diet. Unfortunately, as I have shown in previous chapters, even the strictest form of the Mediterranean diet has a limited beneficial effect on aging and disease. And because most Europeans do not know what the Mediterranean diet entails, and also because adherence to the strictest form is difficult, it is seldom adopted even in the Mediterranean region. A recent worldwide analysis revealed that between 8% and 9% of the global population has been diagnosed with one of the major 29 autoimmune diseases, the most common being type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Crohn's disease, polymyalgia, psoriasis, lupus, and rheumatoid arthritis. Alarmingly, the number of newly diagnosed cases of autoimmune diseases has been on the rise for the past 30 years. In the last decade, the incidence has jumped worldwide by a remarkable 19% a year. In other words, autoimmune diseases appear to be doubling in number every 5 years. While some of this increase can be attributed to improved diagnosis and awareness of certain conditions, it's likely that environmental and dietary factors are also to blame. Nutrition and autoimmune diseases. Obesity has been linked to multiple autoimmune diseases, including multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis. It may also be linked to Crohn's and other autoimmune diseases of the gut. Because fat cells can be an important source of inflammatory molecules like TNF-alpha and IL-6, the connection between obesity and autoimmune disorders could be related to abdominal fat. Fat accumulated in the abdomen and elsewhere in the body can generate molecules that stimulate immune responses, prompting immune cells to turn against other ordinary body cells. High salt consumption is also believed to contribute to autoimmune diseases, possibly by promoting the activation of T cells, a central culprit in many autoimmune diseases. More studies are needed to confirm and understand the role of sodium in autoimmune disorders, but because salt is also involved in cardiovascular disease, Moderation is generally recommended for those diagnosed with or at high risk for autoimmune diseases. Diet can also affect the immune system by altering the bacteria population in the gut, which in turn regulates many different immune cells. It's well established that the Western diet can have inflammatory negative effects on the types of microbiota occupying the human gut. Research shows the bacterial population present in the gut of people eating an animal-based Western diet can be rapidly altered to a less inflammatory population simply by switching to a plant-based diet. At the table with your ancestors. A less understood potential factor explaining the rapid worldwide increase in autoimmune diseases may involve expanding choices in a modern globalized food supply. My laboratory is only beginning to investigate this aspect of autoimmune diseases. We suspect, however, that certain aspects of today's globalized diet may trigger autoimmune responses. For example, in a study, cow's milk consumption in children was associated with elevated autoimmunity against the pancreatic cells that generate insulin, resulting in an increased risk for type 1 diabetes. Eventually, it will be possible to connect a person's DNA, the genome, to the food he or she should avoid eating to prevent autoimmune disorders or intolerances. For now, my best advice is to eat at the table of your ancestors. This means finding out where your parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents came from and what foods were common in those places. My ancestors are all from Italy, and because of this, my diet is rich in tomatoes, green beans, garbanzo beans, and olive oil. Tomatoes are known to activate an immune response in a small minority of people, and they arrived in Italy only 400 years ago. But that's long enough that there is minimal risk that they will cause widespread autoimmunities or intolerances in today's Italians. In contrast, a grandchild of Japanese or Southern Italians, both populations without milk in their traditional historical adult diet, is likely to develop lactose intolerance as an adult. If my grandparents were from Okinawa, I would include sweet potatoes and seaweeds in my diet. If they were from Germany, cabbage and asparagus. It seems complicated, but it's not. It may require you to sit down with your parents or grandparents and ask questions, or ask an old person who used to live in the same area as your grandparents. Try to get the full list, since every component of their diet was probably selected to make up a full nourishment diet. Even though a little village like that of my parents in southern Italy did not conduct scientific studies to determine what diet was good or bad, everyone knew everyone else. And if someone developed vitamin B12 deficiency because they never ate fish or meat or eggs, everyone else in town would hear about it and eventually learn how to avoid vitamin B12 deficiency. Similarly, if many babies who drank cow's milk developed problems, people would eventually notice and switch their babies to goat's milk. This type of food selection can happen more easily in villages and small towns, but it can also occur in cities if people live their whole lives in the same place. It would be much less likely to happen in the United States or in large cities like London or Tokyo, where communities are more transient and people know less about their neighbors' diseases and food habits. We do not yet have solid evidence that eating at the table of your ancestors will prevent diseases and make you live longer. And I'm not proposing that you eat exactly what your grandparents ate, rather that you match what they ate with the longevity diet described in this book. When you don't have the luxury of waiting until conclusive scientific and clinical studies are completed, it makes sense to adopt the best possible hypothesis using all the available information. In this case, the hypothesis is that a town of 2,000 people and the surrounding towns, together with the doctors working in these towns, will be able to detect many of the advantages and disadvantages associated with particular foods by observing their effect over decades and by learning from their parents and grandparents. Much of the information will end up being correct. Some of it will be incorrect, but the risk of adopting this strategy is virtually zero. The food that was common and safe at the table of your ancestors is very unlikely to be harmful to you. It's also important to know what your ancestors didn't eat. While the market may now be rich with so-called health foods and superfoods, ranging from kale to curcumin, quinoa to chia seeds, that can provide high levels of vitamins or protein, these varied ingredients and foods may be more harmful than helpful to people whose ancestors never consumed them. Quinoa, which originally comes from the Peruvian Andes, may be perfectly safe for people whose ancestors used it as a staple ingredient in their diet. It may also be fine for the great majority of people around the world. But it may lead to allergies, intolerances, and even autoimmune diseases in a small group of people, particularly those exposed to other factors contributing to autoimmune diseases. For example, quinoa was shown to increase the immune response in mice, which may be evidence of its potential to cause autoimmune diseases in humans, and it was shown to cause severe allergic reactions in multiple patients in the United States and France. Thus, if all your ancestors going back 300 years lived in Germany, for example, it may be best to avoid health foods like quinoa and turmeric, curcumin, that historically were not key ingredients of the German diet. Autoimmune disease treatment. The above-listed guidelines for the prevention of autoimmune diseases should also be adopted by patients undergoing disease treatment. In the following section, I focus on the use of FMD for the treatment of multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis. Autoimmune diseases my group and others have investigated both in mouse studies and in human clinical trials. We have now tested the FMD with two additional major autoimmune diseases in mice. In both cases, it worked surprisingly well, suggesting that FMD has the potential to reduce the severity of many autoimmune diseases. Please consider that these interventions are still under clinical or laboratory investigation and that until larger clinical trials are completed, we cannot know whether they are effective in humans, nor can we exclude the possibility of severe side effects in a minority of patients. Multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis, MS, is an autoimmune disorder in which immune cells, T cells, attack the insulating sheath around nerve fibers in the central nervous system. The clinical presentation includes debility of one or more limbs, partial or total loss of unilateral vision, and generalized pain. Patients generally suffer relapses of symptoms, which can be short but periodic. In some patients, the associated symptoms progress. Our research related to FMD and autoimmune diseases started after we discovered that fasting causes a major drop in the number of circulating white blood cells in mice, followed by a return to normal levels after they resume a normal diet. See Figure 11.1. In the same study, we showed that during fasting, long-term hematopoietic stem cells are turned on and expanded. This type of stem cell found in the blood is capable of generating the various cells of the immune system. Two research questions followed this finding. 1. Does the fasting preferentially kill dysfunctional cells, including autoimmune cells? 2. When animals or humans return to their normal diet after fasting, will the stem cells generate only healthy immune cells, or will the new cells also become autoimmune? After we published our findings, I started receiving emails from people who, having read media accounts of our study, had attempted fasting to fight their autoimmune disorders. Several reported to me that 4 or 5 days of FMD had reduced and in some cases even cured their autoimmune diseases. The results of our first set of tests in mice were remarkable. To replace autoimmune cells with good ones, we hypothesized, we had to first kill off the bad ones. It worked. Cycles of the FMD not only reduced the severity of the multiple sclerosis in all mice, it eliminated all symptoms in a portion of the mice that had already developed the disease. Each cycle of the FMD killed a portion of the autoimmune cells, and 3 cycles eliminated disease symptoms in 20% of the mice. FMD worked in another remarkable way. It promoted regeneration of the damaged myelin in the mouse spinal cord. Thus, FMD cycles reversed the autoimmunity in a subset of mice by 1. Killing off bad immune cells, 2. generating new and healthy ones, and 3, turning on progenitor cells, cells similar to stem cells, which can regenerate damaged nerves. This is an example of what I call rejuvenation from within. FMD kills many cells, but it is particularly effective in killing off old and damaged immune cells that have lost the ability to distinguish between the cells of its own body and invading organisms such as bacteria and viruses. Fasting increases stem cells but reduces immune cells. After refeeding, stem cells generate new and healthy immune cells. See figure 11.2. In mice, FMD could do even more. It seemed to prompt the body to detect damage in the spinal cord, like it detects damage to the skin after a cut, and turn on stem and progenitor cells to repair the damage. Could the FMD actually cure multiple sclerosis in human patients? In collaboration with other researchers, we performed a randomized clinical trial on patients with multiple sclerosis, relapsing, remitting, to determine just this. 20 MS patients were asked to undergo a single 7-day cycle of an FMD, followed by a Mediterranean diet for 6 months. The choice of the Mediterranean diet instead of the longevity diet was made by our clinical collaborators at Charité University Medicine Berlin. In our future MS studies, we anticipate combining the periodic FMD with the everyday longevity diet. A control group of 20 MS patients continued their normal diet. The FMD began with a pre-fasting day of 800 calories from fruit, rice, and/or potatoes. This was followed by 7 fasting days, during which patients consumed 200 to 350 calories a day from vegetable broths or vegetable juice, supplemented with linseed oil, omega-3, 3 times daily. Patients were advised to drink 2 to 3 liters of unsweetened fluids each day, water and herbal teas. After the 7-day FMD period, solid foods were reintroduced slowly for 3 days. Patients followed a plant-based Mediterranean diet for the next 6 months, see Chapter 4. An additional 20 MS patients were placed on a ketogenic diet, very high levels of fat, normal protein, and low carbohydrates, for 6 months. A ketogenic diet had previously shown improved outcomes for MS patients. After the study ended, patients who had received a single cycle of FMD reported significant improvements in quality of life, physical health, and mental health. Side effects unrelated to MS were similar in both groups and were reported by approximately 20% of patients on the regular diet and those receiving the FMD. The most common side effects were respiratory tract infections and urinary tract infections, but there was no indication of liver or other damage. 90% of the patients in the FMD group were able to complete the trial period. During the 6-month study period, 4 relapses were observed in the control group, and 3 relapses were observed in the FMD group. Overall, this study indicates that FMD is safe and potentially effective in MS patients, although additional and larger studies are necessary to confirm these results. Notably, whereas mice received multiple cycles of FMD, human subjects received only 1 7-day cycle, which raises the possibility that efficacy would increase once multiple cycles are tested in human MS patients, followed by the longevity diet. We are now preparing to perform several larger clinical trials with hundreds of MS patients exposed to multiple cycles of FMD. Crohn's disease and colitis. After we published our work on fasting and immunity, journalist and autoimmune disease sufferer Jenny Russell of The Times of London wrote several articles about it. I include one of these articles below. At the time, it was too early to tell journalists about our work on multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune disorders, but we were already convinced the results were promising. Fasting transformed me after medicine failed. By Jenny Russell, Times of London, April 22, 2015. In the last 10 months, my life has been transformed. I didn't write a book, move house, have children, find a faith, or change my job. Instead, I have gone from being an exhausted person with a lifelong and incurable illness, kept alive by four drugs, to a currently healthy and energetic one. This remarkable difference has been brought about by a therapy that's simple, free, and overlooked by the NHS. Fasting. I tried fasting because I was desperate. It's 2 decades since I developed a serious autoimmune condition, which has often left me sleeping 12 hours a day and sometimes kept me in bed for months at a time. It was made worse by chemotherapy for cancer 5 years ago. I was told after that I could never live without immune-suppressing drugs. When I tried to, I was rushed to hospital as an emergency admission and spent several days on drips. That was when I came across research from the University of Southern California. Walter Longo, a leading biogerontologist who had been studying the effects of fasting on mice for 20 years, had discovered that if mice were starved for 3 days, their immune systems started to regenerate. Starvation forced the bone marrow to create stem cells, replacing the faulty immune response with a normal one. Intermittent fasts over 6 months created steady improvement. This therapy might, said Longo, prove remarkably effective for anyone with an autoimmune condition or whose immune system was deteriorating with age. He cautioned that nothing was proven until human trials had been done. I had nothing to lose by trying it, except my temper and a little weight. I started the first fast on a boat journey on a stormy sea. It was made a lot easier by the fact that I'd lost my appetite anyway, and that I wasn't required to do anything except lie in a bunk and read. Still, it was very boring to have nothing to look forward to but hot water, cold water, fizzy water, black tea, green tea, mint tea. I got fiercely hungry and sometimes dizzy, but the sensation would pass. I lasted 2.5 days and thought nothing could come of it. On the 4th day, I woke feeling better than I had for years. Since then, I have fasted 3 more times, most recently for 4 days. It's no fun. I couldn't do it while working or cooking for anyone else. You need to be free to crash out whenever your indignant body complains. You also need distractions to look forward to when you remember, gloomily, that there isn't a meal ahead. Books, films, the company of partners and friends. I only do it because the results have been so dramatic. I am off every drug, and for the first time since getting ill, I don't have to ration my energy and time. I can't know if it will last, but I have become a quiet evangelist. Fasting, as one doctor said recently, may be the panacea that Western medicine forgot. In the last few years, diabetes researchers have found that the disease can be cured by a daily 600-calorie diet for 8 weeks. Longo's own earlier research indicates that fasting is as effective as chemotherapy in treating cancer. Combining the two, fasting just before and after treatment, increases the efficacy of chemo by up to 40% while minimizing side effects. Cancer cells cope badly with being simultaneously poisoned and starved, but normal cells gain protection because fasting closes the pathways that let toxins in. Since 1/5 of all cancer-related deaths are due to the effects of chemo, this may be a major breakthrough. We have now carried out mouse studies on Crohn's disease. The results are not yet published, but I can confirm they are very promising. Patients suffering from Crohn's, colitis, or another gastrointestinal inflammatory disease should talk to their doctors about using an FMD in support of standard of care therapy. If the neurologist agrees, follow the FMD protocol in our multiple sclerosis article once every 2 months until either the symptoms improve or it becomes clear that the diet does not help. It is best if this is done as part of a clinical trial. Rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is a chronic autoimmune inflammatory disease resulting in the destruction of multiple joints. It affects about 1% of the overall population and 2% of people over the age of 60. Fasting or very low-calorie diets lasting 1 to 3 weeks have been shown to be effective in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis, or RA. Inflammation and pain typical of RA can improve within a few days of commencing the fast, but they return after patients resume their normal diet. If the fasting period is followed by a vegetarian diet, some of the therapeutic effects remain. This combination of therapy has produced beneficial results lasting years. The efficacy of this approach has been confirmed by 4 different studies, including 2 randomized clinical trials. For many patients able to endure long-term fasting and willing to permanently modify their diet, fasting cycles have the potential to not only augment but also replace existing medical treatments. What has yet to be tried is multiple/periodic cycles of the periodic FMD every 1 to 3 months in the treatment of RA instead of a single cycle followed by major changes in the diet. Our research on multiple sclerosis, Crohn's, and several other autoimmune diseases, combined with our clinical results suggesting that FMD reduces systemic inflammation in the great majority of patients with high inflammation, CRP, at the beginning of the trial, suggests that the ideal way to treat RA will be with cycles of the 5-day FMD, see Chapter 6, every 1 to 3 months. Between cycles, I recommend the longevity diet described in Chapter 4. We have evidence that monthly cycles of FMD could benefit RA patients even in the absence of switching to a Mediterranean or longevity diet. While this is not my recommendation, for those who cannot permanently change their diet, the monthly 5 days of FMD may be a good option. Notably, FMD would have the advantage of providing relatively high calories, which would allow patients to do this under medical supervision, but without checking into a clinic. Considering that in our pilot multiple sclerosis trial, a week-long FMD was safe and potentially effective in improving patients' quality of life, and considering past studies on RA, a periodic 7-day FMD may be more effective than a shorter one. After future studies, we will know more about the efficacy of FMD against various autoimmune disorders. We will also know more about the length and frequency of the diet best suited to treating these diseases. Summary: Prevention and Treatment of Autoimmune Diseases. Prevention. 1. Follow the longevity diet, making sure you do so in such a way that you maintain a healthy weight and low abdominal circumference. 2. Avoid a high-salt diet. 3. Eat foods your ancestors ate frequently and avoid foods that were not part of their diet. Treatment. 1. Adopt all changes in the prevention section above. 2. With your doctor's approval and close supervision, and preferably as part of a clinical trial, alternate the longevity diet with a monthly 5-day FMD or the 7-day FMD described above, every 2 months. Chapter 12. How to Stay Young. I've postponed writing this book for years out of concern that my recommendations, while optimizing healthy longevity, would cause side effects. Before I could put this down on paper, I needed to determine how nutrients are linked to genes and molecules in cells, mice, and people, and to understand whether and how the body can fix and rejuvenate itself. I had to test my theory on myself and in randomized clinical trials. I also followed thousands of patients with cancer, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, and other diseases and conditions as part of clinical trials, or often directly by working with them or their physicians. I performed parallel studies of human populations with specific genetic mutations, such as the Laurens community in Ecuador, and consumed specific diets, such as the centenarians in Calabria and Okinawa. Finally, I performed epidemiological studies of large U.S. populations to understand the association between the consumption of certain foods and disease. I am grateful to the extraordinary students and research scientists in my laboratories in Los Angeles and Milan who have given their all for years, allowing me to test and prove my hypothesis. I am also grateful to my collaborators from all parts of the globe and across many fields of study. In the 30 years that I have worked on aging, The motivation driving me forward was the desire to discover the genes and molecular mechanisms that regulate aging and a healthy lifespan, with the final goal to help people who have run out of therapeutic options. Not long ago, I visited a famous journalist in the end stages of cancer. His oncologists had shrugged and sent him home.